Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into a highly anticipated edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr., Jim Ossarski, Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. Jim, people were like sending tweets to us Saturday night, right. Sunday morning. Where's the BBP?
Right.
We need the post-draft BBP. It is highly anticipated.
It is.
We got some goodies for you today, too.
Yeah.
But it's here we are. We needed, we just give us a thank you, everyone, that didn't for giving us a day after what we went through.
Yeah, it was
really
a little,
Saturday especially, but we needed a little, we just needed a day break.
Yeah, it was 11, well, at the time for a while, 12 picks.
Yeah.
11 total. You know, trying to monitor other stuff that was or wasn't happening. Yeah, it was pretty hectic. Saturday especially, you were saying for a while it was, you know, meant a lot to the organization, but just like logistically with Joe Mixon coming in, trying to fit that in, the actual draft happening when, you know, they don't care about these guys, so it's just like time is flying past. It was a little hectic.
Well, Saturday you had, because that when they made the trade in the second round and added the fourth,
right.
You then added five picks in that first really hour and a half.
Right.
Of the first round of that day three, and then Mixon was right in the middle of that,
right.
His press conference here and all that entailed, and a wild day. There's a lot to get to here,
yeah.
A lot to get to. So we're just gonna try to go kind of chronologically here through,
yeah.
This for you. Let's start with the overall theme before. And then we'll go through the players a little bit. I think it's apparent. We said this in our post-wrap video. If you haven't seen it, Cincinnati.com, go to the Bengals page. I can't even send out links anymore. There's,
yeah.
Too much. Go to the draft tracker. There's links in there to every player's individual page. We have reaction videos to each individual pick and what their role will be and what it meant and within the scope of the team and the draft. Go check all that stuff out. It's all there sitting waiting for you as well. In the draft recap video where we kind of went over the whole thing, this is where we started, and this was the focus of my story kind of theming out the draft in Monday's paper. It's all about speed.
Yeah.
And it's such a cliche. I hate saying that because it's such a cliche.
Right.
Yeah, of course you get younger and faster. Younger people are faster,
right.
And they're younger, and that's what drafts are, right? But this was different. This wasn't just a cliche. This was absolutely putting the stamp down that the way this game is changing has left the Bengals a little bit behind in recent years. They've been too slow. And it's not just taking speed. It's taking the fastest guy in the history of the combine. It's taking the third fastest receiver on top of that guy. It's taking the fastest edge rusher. It's taking the fastest, what would have been the fastest linebacker if he wouldn't have been a combine,
right.
Snub. It's taking another defensive end who had the fastest 20 shuttle,
right.
Which is a great defensive end judge of speed and burst. It's
and then two combine guys or guys who were not invited to combines that posted
great.
What, Mixon 4.4,
Brandon Wilson 4.36,
4.36,
yeah,
so, yeah.
Mixon 4.45. I went back through some of the past drafts
and look at some of their combine numbers and rankings. And there's a few guys in there, of course. I mean, Mario Alford was a seventh-round throwaway just because he was fast. And, you know, William Jackson III was one of the fastest corners. And Josh Shaw was, like, top five corner in the 40. And 40 times are not indicative of this guy's going to be good or whatever. Right. But it does quantify what we're talking about here. There's you probably could gather – I kind of judged about the last three drafts – you maybe had as many people with this type of speed qualifier that you got all in one weekend for this team.
Right, yeah. They're, and it wasn't just that, Paul. I think it was, you know, I think someone tweeted something about, you know, is John Ross anything more than Darius Hayward Bay? And I think that's the point. It is, this wasn't just fast for the sake of faster, three cone for three cone or 20, you know what I mean? It was, if you look at these guys' college careers, it was practical application of that speed.
Yep.
And actual production at a high level. You know, say what you want about University of Houston, but look, they've turned out some good players. Brandon Wilson did it, you know, at multiple positions, and he was like one of the last guys. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, obviously we know about Carl Lawson and Jordan Willis and the big-time program guys. So, yeah, Paul, it was really interesting. And this goes back to the start of this offseason, in my opinion, with guys like Pecco being let go and Dansby being let go. And, you know, it's just it's kind of time.
Yeah, they were too slow. Paul Gunther said it. We had him in after the third or fourth round. There's so many. I don't remember which one it was. And it was the first thing he said. He said, my objective was we needed to get faster on all three levels.
Yeah.
And I think they, you know, accomplished that. They literally did. You know, Wilson was as fast as you got at corner. Yeah. And then Evans and, of course, the two guys that they took at edge rusher. So let me run down the picks for you, and we will follow that up here. So the Bengals opened on Thursday at number 9. And took John Ross, wide receiver out of Washington, combine super freak 4.22. Day two came. The Bengals traded back from 41 to 48. Minnesota came up and took Dalvin Cook. Both Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, and Alvin Kamara were all on the board there. I think the Bengals, knowing that not a whole lot of teams had interest in their target,
right?
They felt confident moving back. They did, acquired an extra 4 and took, as you probably know by now, controversial Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon. In the third round, they took defensive end Jordan Willis out of Kansas State. Followed that up with another defensive end linebacker type, Carl Lawson out of Auburn, two productive edge rusher types. 4B was wide receiver Josh Malone from Tennessee, a stretch the field speed guy. 4C, defensive tackle Ryan Glasgow of Michigan, defensive big, hefty defensive tackle guy. Then 5A, they did it. Went kicker with Jake Elliott out of Memphis. 5B, they finally touched the offensive line with J.J. Dielman, a center out of Utah. We've talked a little bit about Jordan Evans. He was the first pick in the 6th round, the linebacker out of Oklahoma. Brandon Wilson, DB out of Houston. 6B, they traded up to get him and gave up a 7. And then with one of the final picks in the draft, took Mason Schreck, a tight end out of Buffalo.
Whew. Yeah.
And so it's going to be a very full roster. Let's go back to John Ross.
Yeah.
Day one, the draft did not go as anyone, I think, thought.
No.
I mean, including teams. And the more it's kind of come out now that it's over is how clueless everyone really right. was. The mock drafts were dumb. The teams were dumb. Like, nobody really knew how anybody felt because there were
John Fox is sitting there thinking dumb.
Oh. Some people might have lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see John Fox and Chicago trades up and takes Trubisky, which you're thinking at the time, ooh, that might be one that really helps the Bengals out.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, three more picks that you didn't think would go off before them go off. And so by the time they go at 9, you have a glut of these big 6 defensive players that we had talked about sitting there. You had Jonathan Allen and you had the Alabama trio. You had Jonathan Allen, O.J. Howard, and Reuben Foster.
Right.
All there, as well as Marshawn Lattimore,
yep,
the corner out of Ohio State. And so you're thinking, wow, who would have thought that they would have one or two of these guys, much less four of them? And if you listened to the BBP last week,
right,
you knew that this was a possibility where they would go, and that was John Ross. Because, I mean, we've been saying it since speed on offense has been was sorely lacking at the skill positions,
yeah,
and continued to be. The only thing we thought was maybe they would give the current crop of receivers another year. But still, I think it was apparent that they really felt like he was the playmaker in this draft.
Yeah, I, you know, and for those wondering it sort of why Allen wasn't taken, for me, Paul, I was a little surprised when they wanted John Ross and Joe Mixon 1 and 2. So they are happy with that. That was their plan that we've come to learn. And, you know, I will say I was a little surprised that Allen went by, but we find out later. It's, I mean, John Ross's medicals went through. Jonathan Allen's didn't.
For a lot of teams.
You know,
clearly
he
ended up going
to
18.
Right. So,
or 17 to Washington.
You know, I guess I was not as believing of that stuff. I thought he was a little, you know, hey, every team is different, right? People view those things differently. So that was really the one. I mean, I wasn't surprised they passed on O.J. Howard or even Reuben Foster, you know, as we've kind of moved away from that type of stuff, or the DBs,
yeah,
you know, that were available. So really to me, it was the Allen carrot, right? Kind of knowing that they were, I mean, if you listen to us or read us, you knew it was Joe Mixon in the second round. Really the only debate would have been if Reuben Foster was also there, which right, that clearly was taken away from them. So, and then Jordan Willis answers the question of, what are you going to do with speed edge? Well,
yeah,
there it came
there it
later
was
in the third. So, but yeah, Ross is it'll be interesting, Paul.
Look, here's my opinion on it. If he stays healthy, it was the best pick. It
yeah
was the right choice.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. And, you know, he's had issues. He had an ACL. I don't mind an ACL. He had a meniscus thing. It's a little more worrisome than that. I don't worry about the fact that he had a labrum surgery. I mean, he
yeah
played 9 games through it last
right
year. You know, he really missed one season, and it was basically because of the ACL
right
and had a second injury trying while he was recovering from that. There's a lot of BS out there about how serious his injuries were, and he
right
kind of addressed that. Let's do that. Let's talk. Let me bring you in us discussing durability concerns and what John Ross had heard about himself
right
out there. Here, I want to bring this in. So here's John Ross talking about the idea that he has durability concerns.
Obviously, a lot of people during this process for you have been trying to talk about your durability and stuff like that. Have you found that frustrating, have to constantly feel like you're defending yourself, or do you not mind doing it because it's like, you know, you want the truth to be out there about how you feel and stuff?
I would say a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It gets frustrating. Just because you can play a whole season. And the injuries could have happened several years ago. I played a whole season and people were still, people were saying like it was jokes on Twitter, like, you know, after his first kick return, I'm holding my knee or stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's all funny now, but, you know, I don't feel the need to keep on defending myself because, like I was telling coaches, you can get hurt doing anything nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't really feel the pressure to defend myself.
We hear a lot about the process, about the poking and prodding and pulling they do. I mean, were you kind of even amazed at how much there is of just a strain on you physically, just trying to go through all this stuff to prove yourself?
Yeah, I almost felt like a robot.
Yeah.
Know? Like, and I think everyone felt like that, not even the guys who actually had things wrong with them.
Yeah.
Like, you go from one room getting pulled by 6 different doctors, and you go right to the next room, it's the same thing. So you almost kind of just feel like a robot, and like you that's what you're there for.
Do you
yeah
feel like the football gods owe you a healthy year that's coming up here?
I think it's one pending. Yeah, so I really hope so.
What about the because he talked about the durability, but the physicality part of it, people think a speed guy is right. not physical. Is there a chip on the shoulder because of that you want to prove that you are physical?
Yeah, well, I think it was hard to show that I was because I tore my labrum so early in the season. I tore my labrum like the fifth game. Okay. So I wasn't even able to use my arms. The times that I did, I kind of struggled because I didn't have the strength in my shoulder. But I'm definitely a physical guy. I tore my labrum blocking. And we were playing one of the most physical teams in our conference, in Stanford. So, you know, it was. I don't think people understand. You know, some people don't watch the film, so that's why I feel like there's no need to defend yourself sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good year for having a torn labrum.
For sure,
that's like half the year. That's more than which by 14 games, mm-hmm. right? So you played nine of them with a
labrum torn. Yeah.
It's got to be a point of pride for you that, I mean, obviously you missed the 1 year, but, mm-hmm. I mean, you played all those games through a number of different things. Is that sort of a point of pride that you point out, like, listen, I play through it, though. I may have had some dings right. and nicks, but I'm out there.
Right, so just imagine if I was healthy is what I could pitch to people. But then again, I feel like that's going back to defending yourself. It don't really do nothing to you but create distractions, and I kind of don't want distractions on me or the team, so I don't really, you know, say too much about it. I just got to do what I'm here for. That's
where did the Bengals medical staff rate in terms of poking and prodding with respect to other medical staffs in the league? Did the Bengals really examine you pretty thoroughly comparatively?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just kind of remember every doctor really just really checking my shoulder because that's what, you know, they were worried right. about, because I did, you know, reach out to everyone and tell them that I did have a torn labrum and I was going to get surgery. But everybody, of course, wanted to check my knees, and everyone was really pulling on my knees a lot.
At one point, I think during the process, I think your agent put out a statement saying, look, everybody, these are the actual injuries he's right. had. Stop spreading right. misinformation. Has that kind of blown your mind, the way things can get taken out of context and people yeah. can think things about you?
And I still, till this day, wonder how they got that out of context. So it was yeah. people saying that I tore both my ACLs. I was playing on an MCL sprain. And I had to go ask my doctors. I was like, is this me? Like,
yeah,
I don't know what I had to check my medical history. Cause I was like, I didn't remember none of this happening.
Right, yeah.
So it was people sending me that. And once I sent it to him, I'm like, can we release a statement or something? Because that's just not right. I don't think that's yeah. fair to anybody. I wouldn't wish that on my enemy.
Right, know? Yeah.
That's something that's, it's like you're playing with someone's life. And I don't think that's fair to anyone. So yeah. I just wanted to release a statement and let everyone know what actually happened. Because right. then, you know, teams pay attention to stuff like that. And then you hear all that, now they're digging deeper into medical history. Now they find someone, you were a kid.
Yeah.
Kindergarten, ankle sprain, and it yeah. might change your life. So,
yeah, yeah.
But I definitely want to, you know, clear the air and yeah. just make sure things are right.
Look, anybody can get injured at any time. Now, when you're his size and right. have had repeated injuries, different ones, yeah, there's concerns. But at a certain point, the medical people say, look, today he is, by the time training camp starts, right. going to be 100% healthy. And, you know, they do enough tests on these guys.
Right.
Between the combine checks and the medical rechecks. And when they bring them in and test them again. I right. mean, they poke and prod every single thing. And they came away with a clean bill of health on John Ross. And if you... You can get 4.2 speed, and we talked about him many times during the lead up to this.
Right.
It's not just that; it's that his speed and quickness—he uses it so well,
right.
and he's effective as a player doing it. It's DeSean Jackson, but faster and better in shorter spaces.
Right,
stopping faster. It's the stopping. It's the lateral stuff. I mean, if you watched the draft, you saw the highlights of him leaving Adoree Jackson, who went 18th in this draft,
right.
on his butt right off the line right. with a quick left to right. You saw him separate on a pattern to the pylon from the 5-yard line to the point where it's stealing. The Cal defender is not even near him.
Right.
Lateral quickness. And then the stop and start where you're so worried about him going over the top. Boom, he stops, turns around, and it's 10 yards. That's a game. That's the game changer.
Right.
If he's healthy, I think it's the best. I do think it was the best pick if he stays healthy, and that'll continue to be an if.
Yeah. My last thought on Ross here, Paul, is you mentioned the lateral and the stop start. James Urban was quick to point that out, and I go right to the red zone and the lack of ability to score touchdowns for yep. this team with AJ Green before he got hurt. And after A.J. Green, look, A.J. Green's going to be a Hall of Famer. look, you can scheme A.J. Green in the red zone and in the end zone in short yardage. You got boundaries. We saw it in New England. We saw it in other situations where in Pittsburgh where A.J. Green wasn't open. And Andy's not going to force that. So what happens, right? A.J. Green's doing his thing. We saw the issues when Tyler Eifert isn't there. Where was Tyler Boyd, Brandon LaFell? Separation within that 4 to 6 yards was not around. And that's, to me, Paul, Ken Zampezi doesn't say a whole lot, but his face says some things. And when James Urban talked about stop, start, lateral, the ability to get open, that's where John Ross, and you've been on this from the beginning, on how effective he is in the red zone. I think in Ken Zampezi's offense, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see that separation within a couple yards, you know, where this guy gives you that in the end zone. And I think that's where, his role is going to be defined. I think it's going to be like a lot of Bengals where, you know, he's going to have to fight for playing time over Brandon LaFell and whatever. But when it comes to that stuff, it's just another weapon that I think is a little underrated.
You know, we did lots of studies in recent years on why the Bengals suddenly got so good in the red zone. And some of it was to Eifert, and this was back previous to last year. And it came from the development of Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. And even one year it was just Mohamed Sanu was out there when Marvin Jones was hurt. Sometimes they'd have both of them. Or then Marvin Jones had the year where he had 10 or 11 touchdowns. And, you know, and then the one year it was Eifert. You know, 2015, yeah. Eifert had, you know, whatever, all his touchdowns were in the red zone.
Right.
It's just having the other option.
Right.
You just need one other guy that in the small space can create a window in a phone booth.
Yep.
And that's what John Ross does, and he hits the Bengals in both of those areas that they so badly needed. Yeah. They needed over the top, and they needed red zone help. And to get a guy that can do both and scare the crap out of a safety to not shade as much towards A.J. Green,
yeah,
or take advantage of somebody who does decide to shade to A.J. Green,
right,
is just – it helps every aspect of the offense, including the running game. Yeah. So I think the only thing was people said, well, we should have traded back, right? And that's what we had one of our ideal scenarios
question,
here last week. We said ideal scenario, I said John Ross and trade back a few spots. And I think they would have been happy to do that. But because the way things fell, and because there was a lot of differentiation in who was taken in the top 10 from probably a lot of people's boards, people in those early teens knew they were going to get somebody in their top 10 at 12, 13, 14, whatever.
And the Bengals weren't going to tumble all the way down to the 20s.
The only shot was
to
tumble into 25 or 27. Those were the teams that moved up. Because people say, well, look, Buffalo and Cleveland traded at 10 and 12 back. Yeah, all the way to 25 and 27.
Right.
John Ross is not there.
Right.
And as you said, this team wanted John Ross and Joe Mixon. And as nice as it would have been to collect an extra third or whatever it would have been, or even a huge haul to go all the way back to the 20s, they didn't want to do that. The shot of losing who they believe to be the perfect fit for them. And he really is the perfect fit for this offense.
Yeah.
He really is. And like I said, it comes down to him staying healthy. Is, you know, so much of this falls on, hey, the doctor said he's good. You just hope that he can survive the NFL. And we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I like where their head's at with it.
Yeah.
Get more explosive. You like touchdowns?
I do like touchdowns.
You like touchdowns? You need those.
Yeah.
Okay, we're 20 minutes, we're 20 plus minutes in here, and we haven't even gotten to Joe Mixon yet. So Let's do it. We knew this.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts. I mean, we have literally been saying this and writing this week after week after week.
Yeah.
They want Joe Mixon. They are targeting Joe Mixon. The question was he going to make it to the Bengals?
Yeah.
And I think there just weren't enough franchises willing to take the hit.
Right. And not at that point, especially like we really thought Packers. I got word late Thursday night that the Packers probably weren't going to go there after trading their first pick, ended up being number 33. Mm-hmm. They went corner, immediate need for them, first round grade for them. other than that, what was New York, maybe? I mean, there was really no one in that top, which is why the Bengals felt good about trading down. Minnesota came up. That was a question. They went the other guy with some issues.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think it was. I think they knew.
But Marvin probably got that from Zim, to
I'm
be honest.
I'm sure the Zim connection was, look, Zim was like, we will take Mixon. We have Cook higher. They're both there. And they probably both had done research on who would actually take Mixon.
Right.
And that would make the and that made the Bengals confident that they could move back and still get their guy. Yeah. And Minnesota could get their guy. And Zim and Marv can hug it out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it did work for both of them. This was going to so much be about how they handle the initial wave of criticism, which is still ongoing and will be, and all rightfully so. It's not our job to issue the criticism. Paul Docherty did that just fine.
Right.
If you want to read his column about this, it is on Cincinnati.com. His take being, if winning is all that matters and it doesn't matter how you do it, then winning isn't worth it. And that's fine. The Bengals will take their hit. It was going to be about how they handled it and not saying the wrong things. And I thought they chose to treat it as though this pick was no different than anybody else. They weren't going to bring Mike Brown or Katie Blackburn down.
And I asked.
And we asked. And asked for comment if they weren't going to come down, and they were not offering.
Nope. But they never do.
No. Because they just wanted this to be just like any other pick. They brought down the offensive coordinator and the position coach along with the head coach. So Marvin Lewis, Ken Zampezi, Kyle Kasky came and addressed the media.
Which is what they do.
And then the next day when they brought Mixon in, poor Jordan Willis, sat with him because it was Marvin Lewis and the 2 day two picks,
right?
Because those were the 2 day two picks,
right?
Poor Jordan Willis,
yeah,
took that one on the chin a little bit,
yeah.
But you know, the one thing that they didn't say was more important than what they did. They never minimized his mistake.
Right. They didn't, actually, they didn't even call it a mistake.
No. Right. Exactly. I mean, they never minimized it, calling it a mistake.
Right.
Or bringing up anything with what went down before. Or it was that it was one day in this player's life. Everything, as he sits here, is clear from a law perspective, from a moving forward perspective. He's played multiple seasons after serving his suspension. He went through all the hoops he was asked to, both legally and at his school, and he enters the league and has right for gainful employment and has a skill set to do so. And they're willing to give him the setup and the plan to help him move forward.
Yeah.
That's what it came to. But they never said, oh, well, she said, or he.
They didn't put Marvin Lewis didn't put his foot in his mouth like the GM down in Jacksonville with D.D. Westbrook. You know what I mean? And look, we kind of poke fun at Marvin sometimes. I know talk radio here does. He brings a lot of it on himself. I thought Marvin, while he was getting irritated Friday night, again, I thought he said the right things.
Yeah.
We'll hear that here. I thought he said the right. I think the only thing that was different was the Bengals came out and said today, Saturday is the day. Ask Joe and Marvin whatever about whatever. But this is it. Friday rookie camp. It's about football in 2017. Now they can say that stuff. You know, whatever. We don't have to listen to that. But that was the only difference, was because of the media crush. TV usually, like John Ross, got his one-on-ones with every television station, got it with us. They didn't do that with Joe. It was 10 minutes. Here, I'll pull the curtain back. 10 minutes with writers.
Yep.
10 minutes. And that writers also included Dave Lapham and Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com. And then 10 minutes with all of TV. But he did some individuals with ESPN.
NFL Network.
And NFL Network. So, you know, he has some verbal crutches and cues, but he's been answering these questions for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think that was the important thing, is this has been adjudicated. It's been settled civilly. There's really nothing. we ask that this kid hasn't been asked?
Yes.
For years, and like by lawyers and defense attorneys and prosecutors, let alone media like us. So anyway, you're right, Paul. I think they handled it well.
They handled it well. And whether it was the right decision or not, I think, you know,
yeah,
we'll
that's
see.
Up, that's it's up for every individual.
Winning at all costs, you know.
Here's the thing, Paul. Mike Brown's done this for years and years. We say this, right? Doc mentioned drafting the guy in prison. The only problem is none of these guys have helped the Bengals win ever. Yeah. So really what in this case is they hope Joe Mixon will help them win.
and only
time will tell.
Right, and the response from a lot of fans, which I think was to be expected, was a lot of fans saying, I'm giving up my season tickets.
Right.
I'm not doing it. I've been around for this long, and I'm just not doing it anymore.
Right.
I can't stand by this. And if Joe Mixon is a right guard, like, it's just different, right?
Yeah.
But when he's a running back and he runs for a 50-yard touchdown, you cheer.
He can be a star, right?
You cheer and feel like you need to take a shower.
Right.
It feels icky, right? It's like, oh, yes, that's great. But if you're a fan, that makes it's you can cheer for a touchdown when the right guard blocked well.
Right.
But when you're literally cheering for the guy running 50 yards, it makes it harder on fans to be proud, to wear Bengals gear, to be happy to say they're Bengals fans. And fans are really struggling with that right now from what the reaction I've seen.
Right.
And I understand, and I absolutely understand that. And I don't blame any fan for being done with the team for this.
Right.
I think whatever team drafted him knew that was part of it.
Right.
You're going to lose fans over this. And you just hope that you can win them back with his play and with his, you know, way he acts in the community and the way they handle it and trying to help this guy move forward and have a second chance. Right.
So, yeah, let's hear from Marvin.
Yeah.
And actually,
yeah.
if I don't know if we planned for this, so I'm going to put you on the spot, Paul, because you're the producer. I do think it. I thought it was interesting that Joe Mixon was so emotional in a conference call Friday night.
Yeah.
I mean, he bared his soul, basically. I mean, the kid was crying on the phone. And, yeah, you could say, oh, what does that mean? Honestly, Paul, in three here and five drafts, so whatever I've covered, I don't think I've ever heard a kid just
completely
cry on just to ask questions. And he looked so happy Friday here.
Mm-hmm.
Look, finally, real quick before we get to that, it's you mentioned the running back and he's going to score touchdowns and they drafted him to win. People are going to see him. Look, I won't lie. There are people going to see him. He's got a great smile.
Mm-hmm.
He can be
engaging
yeah. and be a face, if you will. Like, when you put him on television, when he runs for 100 yards, scores two touchdowns, he's going to look good. Like, he's got a Jeremy Hill smile. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
You're right, Paul. I think as time goes on, I think each individual fan is going to have to figure out how they feel about it,
It's complicated. Complicated. It's very complicated. Same way Tyreek Hill was complicated for Kansas City fans, but you saw how they reacted when he was scoring his touchdowns, too. You know, fans come around when teams start winning. All right, so here's some of Marvin Lewis and Joe Mixon in reaction to his being drafted.
I know you guys look forward to moving on from this day and just having him as a football player.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm not having that question. I know you guys are looking forward to that. But I know there's some fans that are not going to be able to look past that day.
Yeah,
you're not beholden to those fans or anybody besides.
Yeah, we've addressed that, you know. And,
but what do you say to fans that might be disgusted with
what they saw? They, you know, I don't know that who isn't disgusted at what they saw. But that's one day in the young man's life. And he's had to live that since then. He will continue to have to live that. And he gets an opportunity to move forward and write his script from there on. You know, it's come to a conclusion with the young lady. They've come to, you know, their statements, her statement about how they both would have liked to have handled the day, probably should have handled the day better. But again, that doesn't change it, and we got to make it go, and he's committed to doing that. He has gone down that path as he's gone forward. So, in his life since that day, you know, what he was asked to do there on campus at Oklahoma, from that point on, that entire year, from the president of the university, on down. So, you know, he's been able to cross those bridges all the way through, and then continue on. So,
Joe, what was your reaction when you got that call? How emotional was it for you?
Oh man, it was very emotional. Like, you know, I'm still sitting here crying. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. You know, I'm very thankful, very honored to be a part of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Joe, describe your visits here and what all you had to talk to them about and maybe convince them of.
You know, honestly, you know, the visits, just go there and tell the truth, look them in the eye, be very sincere about it. And, you know, after going there, you know, having a good talk with Coach Lewis, you know, the GM and owner, you know, I feel like the reason why they selected me, you know, they felt very comfortable and they seemed, you know, the type of person I was. You know, I was very genuine to them. And, you know, I was very straight up. And, you know, I can't do nothing but thank the owner, the organization, and Coach Lewis for the opportunity.
What have they talked about in terms of a support system for you?
Hello?
Yeah, Joe, we're still here.
Joe, what have they talked to you in terms of a support system for you to kind of help you through the whole process and keep moving forward?
You know, we're just going to get a support team around me. They had a PR person, and we're going to get with my agent and get with them, and we're, you know, coming up with some things for us to get ready to do, and, you know, I'm looking very forward to it.
All right. So that was sort of like, so that was sort of a very serious, tough day to go through. A lot of very serious topics and just a lot of on edge with everything. After that, we had some fun.
Yes.
Saturday came around, and if you couldn't just embrace it and start having fun, that was all you really had to it. So we're going to go through the picks. We're going to talk about the picks and their roles and things like that, but we're also going to bring you some of our favorite moments from what turned into fairly comical.
And it started with Jordan Willis.
Jordan Willis, man. I got to tell you. I like this dude.
Yeah, I do. I've been tweeting about him for 3 days. It has nothing to do with the fact he ran 4.5 or had 11 and a half sacks.
No. And Jordan Willis, you know, depending on who you talk to, was a first-round type talent from some people. You know, I think he probably went about where the Bengals thought he was going to. And they thought he would be there, and he is fast around the edge. He'll be an instant rotation guy with Michael Johnson, particularly on passing downs, and be able to help out there. He was productive and like relentless type of high motor guy.
Yeah,
not like you're thinking though, but like, I mean, really gets after it. But then he goes to the combine and posts a ridiculous time. In the 40, and it's like, wow, this guy's really got it. And so he can play.
Yeah.
But there's also some other fun things about him.
Yeah.
So he thought he should be drafted between 19 and 45 was the estimate his agent gave him when I asked him if he thought he was, you know, drafted too late. And it sort of went on from there.
Yeah.
And it brought in a pretty funny scenario.
Yep.
So we'll just let Jordan Willis take it from there.
What kind of draft party did you have? You got a lot of family around you?
I've been sitting in my room the last 2 days just waiting for the phone call. My agent was texting me. I didn't even watch the draft. My agent was texting me, letting me know what was going on. And then my trainer, Mark Seminole, was texting me as well, letting me know what was going on.
So you're in your room at school?
I'm at my house in Kansas City in my room.
So let's talk about what was Jordan Willis doing in his room by himself while he wasn't getting picked for 2 days? Like, he's in his room by himself. I think he just got weights. I think he is it's like he's in the yard in prison or something like that. Like the weights with the chains on the end,
right?
And he's just throwing. He's just doing nothing but bench press, just getting ripped. Like
right.
All these people passing on me, I'm just gonna completely just get yoked and take everybody out.
So then I caught up with him the next day and I asked him about. I mean, I'm like, Joe, what was going on? And he elaborated. He's like, nah. Basically, he was by himself in his room, and he did say that, shut the door, family's downstairs, and they set this up. He is one of 11 children, which kind of adds a little bit to his, you know, hey, guys don't know what it's like to be told no. Guys don't know what it's like to not be the center of attention. He's like, that's my whole life. I got an older brother who's in his mid-30s. I got a younger brother in high school. So that's what sort of set this up. And so then I asked him flat out. I'm like, Jordan, you know, like, where did this kind of like chip on your shoulder come from, whatever? And this was his answer.
Where did it come from? I mean, it came from growing up. Like, I grew up in a family of 13 people, two parents, okay, and 11 kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'm a middle child. So, like, I learned very early that it wasn't about me. It was about me and 10 other people in the household. So people always say I'm humble. Not really. It's more so I just learned very early it's not about me. It's not all about Jordan. So, and I've always lived in the area of not being the guy talked about or whatnot. So people say it's a chip. It's really just how I've been my entire life. So, you know, not being getting attention, like, you know, nobody's ever talking about me, but I always seem to show up and get, you know, what I deserve. I'm not going to just take second place, you know. I'm going to keep fighting and grinding to get, you know, my point, you know, across and get what I can get.
He's not humble.
He is not humble.
He's not humble. And don't you think that he is?
Right. And he gets like offended that like when you say high motor, he's like mad about it. He's like, yeah, I finished plays, but so like it was great. Oh man, he's already and he is like, so Joe Mixon's over here next to Marvin. He's just all smiles and happy, and just Jordan Willis just not having it.
No,
he's just like not happy. Joe Mixon or Jordan Willis was not happy to be sitting there on Saturday.
No. He knew he got the short straw on that one too. But he didn't care. He went in there and did his thing. Jordan Willis.
Yeah. Instant scribe favorite.
He's not humble. And don't you dare think that he's humble. I love it. So after Jordan Willis, the Bengals
Carl Lawson from
Auburn. End up going with Carl Lawson. You know, again, very similar. We've seen this before where the Bengals take two guys back-to-back at the same position or close to back-to-back at the same position. Oftentimes, the second guy ends up better.
Yeah.
Brandon Thompson outlasted Devin Still. Marvin Jones ended up better than Mohamed Sanu on the depth chart. And that's the way it goes sometimes. I think Lawson, Paul Gunther's was open to versatility with him, where they will be open to making him sort of a hybrid, where he could drop out and play some linebacker in like a pass rush situation, or come with his hand down and come off the edge.
Right.
You know, but the guy's got a whole lot of speed around the edge, and can really get after the quarterback. And they're, you know, he's a guy that they really haven't wanted to employ.
Right.
I mean, they want a linebacker who's a linebacker, or a defensive end who's a big 6'7", 275, 290 power defensive end. They haven't wanted the hybrid guy who is just a pass rusher, but he's probably too small, you know, or too slow to be linebacker, or too small to be an edge rusher, but he can really get after the quarterback. Comparisons I saw to him, Cameron Wake, PFF compared him to Cameron Wake, which if he's half of that, this is a home run pick. Brandon Graham from the Eagles, those types of guys. Right. But it's just, look, they said since day one, we need guys who can get to the QB.
Right.
And Carl Lawson's going to be a guy who can get to the QB.
Yeah, and just my final thought on Carl is we talked a lot about it, secondary guys maybe forcing Paul Gunther to be creative if they went safety in the first round. I think this is the other way. So now we're into the developmental guys, in my opinion. Guys we're not going to see a lot of. I think Carl Lawson is one of that, in that you'll see him start at D end. You'll see him work at linebacker. I don't think he's going to be great at linebacker. The problem is if he's great at defensive end in Cedric Oboye, he is having a whole lot of problems. You know what I mean? Like, that might speak more to the old line in training camp than Carl Lawson.
Right.
No offense to Carl. But I think he's going to get DN work. I think he's going to get linebacker work. I know Bengals fans are already like, well, we tried this with James Harrison, and they didn't know what to do with him. I think there was another linebacker at some other point, like a 3-4 guy.
Yeah.
That just hasn't worked here in the past. Hey, you know what? The defenses have changed. Front sevens have changed. So I give him a little bit of credit for finding a guy who they think has, a, as Marvin says, an attribute that can keep him here, and that's speed and the ability to finish. Medical issues through college, they feel he's going to get past that.
Yeah.
I think that's a developmental thing as we go in. It's a Josh Malone, the next fourth round, a big wide out. John Ross was not 6'3", 220. That's what Josh Malone is.
Yes. Josh Malone, one of those guys who they feel like is going to be a way better pro than he was a college player. And, you know, that he maybe wasn't really quite utilized as much as he could have been at Tennessee. But he was just a vertical receiver. I mean, he averaged 19.5 yards per reception. He runs a 4.4. He was the third fastest receiver at the combine. He can go over the top. This is the position that we said they would be targeting.
Right.
The type. The mid-round, tall, fast, go-get-it, over-the-top guy. Now, we weren't sure that they would still go for that since they'd already gotten John Ross, who was the over-the-top guy. But when Josh Malone is sitting there, he really seems to be a great value pick as well for this fourth round, where you can get a dude who can go get it and teach him to do a lot of the other stuff. He's got a lot of great traits. And hits him in a spot where they need it. And now the receiver room gets real crowded.
Yeah.
And you go from, you know, with guys that we'll get to as well, receivers that can really help on special teams that are going to force out somebody. And, you know, right now you got to say you've got A.J. Green, Braydon LaFell, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, a clear top four.
Yes.
Then you've got Cody Kaur, Alex Erickson, and Josh Malone.
Right.
Malone being a fourth-round pick ain't going nowhere.
Right.
So Cody Kaur, I think, showed more potential and probably isn't going anywhere. Alex Erickson would say, yeah, but I turned into a great kick returner. We've got like four of those now.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Between John Ross, Joe Mixon, Brandon Wilson, if he sticks.
Right.
Those guys were great kick returners and have a lot more speed.
Yeah.
I loved what Alex Erickson brought, and I thought he really had a knack for it, and it showed, but he didn't have 4.2. He didn't have what those guys have had, and I mean, they did it. They scored touchdowns on returns in college, so this draft could have broken the back of Alex Erickson a little bit, despite all he did to make the team last year.
Right, exactly. It's one thing to beat out Brandon Tate. It's another when the team drafts a first-rounder with already proven kick return touchdowns. Joe Mixon, I hesitate to think they're going to put him back there, but he can do it. And then you trade up for the fourth time in franchise history for, yes, Brandon Wilson is a late-round pick. But again, proven kick returner. But Josh Malone, we tried to talk to him, Paul.
We did.
This is what Josh Malone thought about talking to us.
Hi, Josh. This is PJ Combs, Director of Media Relations for the Bengals. We have some reporters here that would like to ask you a few questions. Do you have a couple minutes?
That sounder... That
you're gonna hear that again.
That sounder is going in the bank to be used for every time we try to get an interview and get denied from this point forward. Because that happens with every pick where they come in. Josh, I've got the reporters here, or whoever they call.
Right.
Oh, I've got the reporters here, and like sometimes they're real happy. Hey guys, or
right.
whatever, and then. Sometimes you just get the tone.
And then it went right to, oh,
nope.
My God. Then went right to voicemail.
Oh, yeah.
Even Marvin joked about that with Joe Mixon. He was like, it was great. We could call him, and it went, and he answered the phone.
He answered the phone. It didn't go to a voicemail that wasn't set up
yet. So that's we did get Josh. We're having some fun with that situation. He was great. He sounds like Barry White. You'll hear from him down the line, I'm sure. But
yeah.
that was a moment that honestly we needed as Saturday just slogged on.
Yeah, it did. So Ryan Glasgow, not a whole lot to say here. Defensive tackle depth, a guy they like. Earned everything, a walk-on at Michigan,
yeah.
Walked on, became a great player for him.
He is, like Jordan Willis, he's a high-motor try-hard.
High-motor try-hard.
I think he's a guy we're going to have to see, of all the – I mean, there's a handful of picks here, Paul. We always talk about rostering 11. He's the interesting one to me to see how he fits in the NFL. I mean, they spent a fourth-round pick on him, but look, you mentioned Devin Still. Brandon Thompson, you've mentioned some DTs that they've picked high and haven't really worked. I'm not going to put that on Ryan, but I'm really curious when you look at a crowded room of Pat Sims and Andrew Billings off injury and Deshaun Williams and what is Marcus Hardison and, oh, yeah, by the way, Wallace Gilberry's back. There's a lot of guys Ryan's going to have to push. So I'm curious. I'm really curious to see how he's using what he does once the Pats go on.
Yeah, how they do it. There's just a lot of guys there right now.
Yeah.
And you can only keep so many.
You only keep and
somebody's getting pushed out.
Right. Fun fact, I covered Ryan Glasgow in high school.
Did you really?
In Aurora, Illinois. He actually was a great story back then. Marmion Academy, former military academy. They were the first team from that city to ever make it to state in Illinois. Big deal back then. His brother, who plays for Detroit, big parts of that, as you can imagine. He had two future NFL guys anchoring the line. So anyway, so we'll see what Ryan's about and where he fits. But again, guys, with D linemen, it's going to be camp and pads.
Yeah,
before we even know anything really about him.
Exactly. Then we got the kicker.
Yeah, Bengals Twitter was so angry about it.
Why? Bengals Twitter's angry about everything.
Yeah, they were.
You know, I got to tell you. We debated this earlier, but when Bengals Twitter loses their mind in anger over the fastest dude in the history of the combine, who's going to score tons of touchdowns and is like a fast skill position guy,
right?
How often do teams be like play fans? You say, guys, wish they draft a fast skill position guy who's exciting,
right.
Score long touchdowns, but Bengals Twitter was mad, and then everyone, we need a kicker, draft a kicker, I want a kicker. We need a new kicker. They draft a kicker. Why that kicker?
They were so mad.
It was the first kicker off the board. They viewed him to be the best kicker. I mean, there were three draftable kickers. It was
right.
There was Jake Elliott. There was Zane Gonzalez from Arizona State and Butker from Georgia Tech.
Harrison Butker.
Thank you. And they liked Elliott. And Elliott, he was really accurate from 50 plus.
Yes.
Never missed an extra, like two, between field goals of less than 30 yards and extra points in college, he was 224 of 224.
Yes.
Very accurate on the ones that you just have to have.
Yes.
And pretty good. He had one bad season. His junior year, he had a bad year for some reason. But outside of those other 3 years, he was very accurate for the most part on the rest of the kicks.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Bengals fans, because Zane Gonzalez set the records and Arizona State, and people really latched on to Darren Simmons saying his kickoffs really separated him, and all of a sudden, all the stat, this is where PFF analytics and all this crap, all Zane Gonzalez kickoffs were best. No, listen, Darren Simmons, this guy, the kickoff game has changed with pooch kicks and directional kicks.
Mortar kicks.
And dropping balls at the one.
Yep.
And all the things that New England was really good at, and sort of Steven Gostkowski, I don't know, maybe in 4 years we'll say revolutionized the game, but the way they approach things really did. It really flipped the field in ways. And honestly, guys, I think that's what Darren Simmons means by his kickoffs separated him from the other guys. I think it's a skill set that they were looking for. Also, Darren Simmons went right to mental makeup, and you mentioned the stats on extra points. And guys, what we've been talking about with Mike Nugent for 10 years, 80% on kicks below average, the extra points below average. How many times do we have to talk about Mike digging himself out of a hole mentally? And finally, he couldn't come back from that a year ago. So, again, we don't know. And then they were also mad that he wasn't just handed the job. So, like, on one hand, they were mad that he was picked, and then they were mad that Darren Simmons didn't say, Randy Bullock's cut.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, they want Jake Elliott to win the job.
Obviously.
We're going to find this out in camp. I mean, look, as long as he doesn't miss every single fake kick, you know, I don't know, Paul. Do you want to stand underneath the goalpost and count all these things as he kicks them into the concrete mill?
I will be.
So as long as that, as long as he's not so awful, which he shouldn't be, we'll see it in the games, right?
Yes.
In the preseason games, he's the one that's going to be run out there to make. And look, Paul, in my opinion, sorry to talk so much about a kicker.
You're into
it. But they want a scoring option. 50 yards, 48 yards. Can the guy score points? They haven't had that in a long time, and other teams do.
I think when you look at this, the fact they used their first pick in the fifth round, knowing when to go kicker and make sure to jump the trend, shows this was the plan all along.
Yeah.
And this is what we said should be the plan all along, by the way, because we are GMs.
Yes.
I mean, we have just crushed this offseason. Yeah. and that is draft the best kicker in this draft and have somebody, I didn't care if it was Bullock or somebody else, you know, they could have brought in a more high-profile free agent, but they clearly said, well, let's just go with the guy and try to replicate Kevin Huber.
Right.
The last time they spent a pick on a specialist was in the fifth round in 2009 on Huber, and he's been here, and he's been to Pro Bowl, and he's beloved.
Right.
And they want Jake Elliott to do the exact same thing. Come in here and be the next Jim Breach, Doug Pelfrey.
Right.
Guy that is here forever and everyone loves and probably be selling used cars when he's 50 in Cincinnati.
Yep.
You know, and that's what they're going to go for. He'll compete, and they definitely want him to win the job. You know, let's not get in a tizzy over which kicker is better.
Right.
Unbelievable.
All
right.
Start the witch hunt.
Start. It's witch hunt time. You know what that means? So finally, so at this point in the draft, after 5A, what I heard most outside of people who are angry that apparently are in the Zane Gonzalez fan club was, how have we not drafted an offensive lineman yet? Our offensive line is a mess. We haven't drafted anybody.
Right.
What is going on? And I said, they have 100% taken the Hoosiers approach. My team is on the floor. and you can argue that they're playing with four instead of five. But but you know, that is their approach. Yep. And we've talked about this the whole time. This draft was bad for offensive line. It was really not going to be one that you were going to be able to fix the 2017 line with this draft at all. And so they didn't. And they drafted for this year in the last two previous years and then signing Andre Smith as well. Do they still have questions? Oh, boy, do they have questions.
Yes.
To me, it's the question still. And that even more so after this draft when they now are going to have all the skill position guys, but it's can they get the ball to them?
Right.
So they finally go offensive line. You know, next year I would see be a year where then you can criticize them for – well, we don't know. Maybe it'll be a terrible year for offensive linemen again. But next year would make more sense to really criticize them for not getting more of an investment in the line because they have unproven pieces now.
Yeah.
So, all right. So they went with J.J. Dielman. The four out of five Utah linemen were picked. What a line.
Yeah.
How about that? And so the Russell Bodine witch hunt, which happened last year.
Yeah.
In the fifth round.
Paul was sure to just not even get into any of this.
No, he did not want to talk about Russell Bodine. He mostly wanted to talk about how he got his guy, and he got him. Do you think any arm wrestling actually happened?
I think, yeah. Let's let everybody hear this. Let's let everybody hear
you
this.
You judge if we think arm wrestling actually occurred. This was Paul Alexander,
Jim Haslett, and Darren Simmons.
And Darren Simmons talking about the mid-round.
Well, we had an interesting day up in the draft room. All three of us wanted the guys, and so we decided to arm wrestle over it. And Haslett and I went at it first, and I beat the count, so I pinned him, cheated, had to cheat. And then Darren and I went off, and Darren beat my butt, and he got the kicker. So anyways, as it turned out, all three of us got exactly the guy we wanted. And that happened with us the whole draft. There's a lot of happy coaches upstairs and a lot of happy management people. The way this draft fell, we love the guys we got. And so that's great for the Bengals.
I don't know what's going on there. But what was important, although I would have loved to have seen like Haslett and Paul A. really going at it.
I think Haslett would have done it.
Yeah, I think so.
Basically, that, to me, what that says is A, those guys are just as slap happy as we were.
Yeah.
And B, that was a group of guys who knew they weren't going to their position after that and were just kind of done for the day. Look, Paul A. was pretty happy. He's always happy about a lineman. Mm-hmm. J.J. Dielman put up 27 reps on the bench. Strong dude. That translates to, what, like a 400-pound bench?
Yeah.
You know? They feel they got, you know, a sleeper. A kid played 5 games at center, broke his foot. Feels he should be ready for camp. Translates to center or guard. Again, unlike Christian Westerman, Paul A. wasn't about to... Can he play center? Is he going to replace Russell? Look,
right.
Russell Bodine's a starter. Eat it, Bengals fans. That's it. TJ Johnson got a 2-year deal, you know, so he's under contract. And then maybe this kid. Maybe what this shows is Christian Westerman, which was like the hypothetical center. Because really, he never played it at Arizona State. It was like he could do it.
Yeah.
Look, this kid, they feel, is a center, despite just 5 games, moving in from tackle. For 2 years. He's not a tackle at the NFL level. Paulie's always happy with strong, big guys in the middle.
Yeah, he is.
So, J.J. Dielman, honestly, we'll see. Again, kind of with Glasgow, he'll probably never be active. He'll be this year's Christian Westerman. And, you know, we'll know about him in 2018. So,
yep. Jordan Evans was next, linebacker out of Oklahoma, cover guy.
Yes.
Cover linebackers. We have 4 picks last year, 2 of them went back for touchdowns. Needs to work on how to be a run-defending linebacker. Needs to learn how to shed blockers, make more consistent tackles, all that type of stuff. But the new school cover linebacker type is what he is, and that's a lot of what they need, too. So sort of like Nick Vigil insurance, maybe. However you'd want to look at it.
Right.
You know, real ran fast. An ignition guy for local. He worked out locally.
Is he a Cincinnati native or dad's a Cincinnati native?
His dad grew up in Cincinnati till he was in like 8th grade and then moved to Norman.
That's right.
And then went to Oklahoma. So he went to Oklahoma. Dad was like a football player as well. He's the first player the Bengals have drafted from Ignition. Cliff Marshall's got such a strong program. He's had a lot of big picks up there. This is the first one, and Cliff has the connection to the Bengals because he used to work here, and a lot of Bengals players work out at Ignition in the offseason. Kind of an interesting connection, and Cliff loved the fact that Jordan – could have gone and trained anyway. He could have gone to the coast.
Yeah.
Miami has a big one. LA has all this. He could have gone anywhere. He wanted a place that was blue collar, faith based type of, and that's why he picked Ignition Cincinnati. And he just thought that was really a telling thing about the type of kid he was. He compared him to Jordan Hicks a little bit. I don't know that you're gonna get that kind of production immediately, but certainly a guy that, you know, he'll get a chance.
Yeah, you're gonna again 2017 role, special teams if he makes the team, or if he makes
the 53. Compete probably with Marquise Flowers would be,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, Marquise Flowers, P.J. Dawson,
yeah.
You know, again, 6th-round pick. They like his ball skills. Look, Burfict and Minter are up after this year. You just kind of got to have some guys. You know what I mean? Nick Vigil's got to really pop, but you know, Evans, if he's on the team and if he's on the 53 or the 46, especially, you'll see him covering kicks.
Yeah. All right, so then 6B, they trade up to take Brandon Wilson, a defensive back from Houston. He played running back there too. He was sort of all over the place.
Yeah.
But then he was super fast. He knew how to get in the end zone.
Yeah, and I had all kinds of problems with this, Paul.
It is like the most troubling stat of 3 days for you.
Yeah, so he scored 6 touchdowns 8 ways?
No, you can't do that. It's impossible to act 8 touchdowns 6 ways.
Look,
you can't.
Let's you know what? Even Brandon doesn't know. So let's hear him try to figure this out.
Your bio said 8 touchdowns 6 different ways. Can you recount all those different ways?
Yeah, I can name all of them. My first one was a field goal return, my redshirt freshman year. Then I had 2 touchdowns, 1 one fumble recovery for a touchdown. Then I had an interception for a touchdown. Then I had 2 returns for a touchdown, 1 against Louisville, 1 against UConn. Then I had 2 rushing touchdowns. I guess it was 2 against, was it Navy? 2 against Navy. And then, how many was that?
I think up to 5 different ways. Did you catch a touchdown?
Or did you throw one?
No. My kick 6 against OU. I think that's all of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it can't always be perfect.
No.
And it's hard to remember all those.
It is.
Even though he was confident in the beginning, he would remember them all.
Yeah, he wasn't as confident as he kept talking.
No. Well, look, sometimes you score so many touchdowns, you just can't even replace them.
Right.
No. 8 touchdowns, 6 ways.
Yes.
The other is literally impossible.
So real quick, I sat in with Rob Livingston and Kevin Coyle. Basically what they said, guys, is he is a nickel corner.
Yeah.
He is a slot corner. So that means on one hand, you like to think they traded up for him, so he's got maybe a good shot to make the team. He's still 6B in a crowded corner room, competing with Benny Binwickery. Duke Tobin said that's why Benny was signed. He's not going to play outside. Marvin kind of mentioned him playing safety. I don't know. Kevin, the position coaches said slot corner and kick return, so that's where he's going to have to make his hay in camp.
It's been a quiet blind spot on this roster that doesn't get talked about enough, which is the lack of a nickel corner, just because Darquez Denard, which another story there, and Josh Shaw have not played as well in the nickel,
right,
as they would like, and so it's just sort of a hole that they've had. Mentioning Darquez, we have to get to this news.
Oh, by the way,
this news dropped for some reason right as the second round was starting. I mean, it almost felt like a news dump,
right?
But I don't know why you would news dump this unless they felt like there was going to be a negative reaction to it.
Nah, I don't know.
Well, anyway, they exercised the 5th round option on Darquez Denard. That was really in question. And I think the fact that they waited till after the first round tells you if they would have ended up with a first round corner for some reason, they probably would not have done it.
That might have been
the
timing of it.
Yeah. So it ends up being, the exact number was like $8.6 million. It's a fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
Same thing with Dre.
Yep.
That Dre had. And they'll tell you, you know, because I asked this question to Mike Brown at the owner's meeting. So you got a guy that you've got to make this decision on that you've never. You just haven't seen consistently.
Right.
And they sort of fashioned it towards what Drake or Patrick. They hadn't seen a ton of Drake or Patrick
right.
when they exercised his 5th-year option either, and that turned out well. Look, good for Darquez because that guy's been getting crapped on around here for a long time.
Yeah.
At least he got his money. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, and just real quick, I mean, you know, on paper, Adam Jones, 2018, it's a team option. At over $6.5 million. So, you know, It's the Bengals. On one hand, the rest of the NFL, you would say the signals Adam Jones option isn't going to be picked up in 2018. I was told, no, they'll make that decision in 2018.
2018.
So
he's still here now.
He's still here now. So I think that'll have a lot to do with how he plays in 2017.
If he plays like he played last year, which wasn't as good as 2015 but was still pretty good, he'll stick around. If he takes another step back and looks like he is on the downslide, he probably won't. I think that is that's the reality of that situation, and Darquez is insurance for that.
Right.
One last pick.
Don't forget him.
He was
almost Mr. Irrelevant. Almost.
Almost. Three away from Mr. Irrelevant, and that was Buffalo tight end Mason Schreck. And people are going to talk about all these things about, oh, this shows how crazy the draft is and how much people love the draft. How there was 100,000 people in Philadelphia, and all people were screaming and yelling, and people love, there's all these mock drafts. You know how I know the draft is overcovered and it's out of control? When Mason Schreck was drafted, I looked for a YouTube highlight video, and I found a 10.5-minute Mason Schreck highlight video.
This made Paul happy. I don't know if this is what's going to be the thing Paul says made him happy, but I'll tell you, people, Paul was real happy to find this video.
I was. Man, I just consumed it. Well, the second play, he has a ridiculous 70-yard reception where he sheds 8 tacklers against my OU Bobcats. So I was like, oh, I went from happy to sad. It's so
kinda
quick.
It's kind of like the media room gag where when they show SEC highlights and there's always a Kentucky guy getting run over.
Yes.
Maction. There's your Bobcat reaching.
Two Bobcats drafted in this draft. Terrell Basham, Blair Brown, congrats. Yeah. One of them went to the Jags, though, unfortunately, so I can't root for him anymore. Mason Schreck, sheer delight.
Yeah.
Had him on the conference call. Absolute delightful guy. You know what he said? He was excited to work with me.
Yes.
With me.
Yeah.
That made me feel good.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Again, a little insight. You know, people right away, oh, the undrafted guys. Where's the undrafted signings? Mason Schreck was ready to be an undrafted free agent. He flat out said, I had a deal with Philly.
He did. The contract terms were already agreed to.
Yes.
He was just waiting for the draft to end. He was on the phone, had been on the phone with them.
Yeah.
And then the Bengals clicked in.
Yeah.
There's Marvin. You're ours.
Yep. So Mason, real quick, another big athletic type, obviously coming on the Mac, probably Fitzy Uzama mold, right? Bit, you know, raw. I don't know.
He said he fashions his game after Tyler Eifert.
Yeah, sure. So maybe Mason can slide to the practice squad.
Yeah,
you know
I
what I mean?
If there's injuries, he would be the back end. But yeah, if there's not, they'll probably try to get him on the practice squad. But they want to get him in house first. See what they can do. All right. That was as exhausting as the weekend was almost.
What made you happy?
You know, really, that did. I think I'm just going to stick with my guns on Mason Schreck. Because everything about him, like, he was just so delightful. The joke was because we had done every conference call of every pick, and there was thought beforehand that we wouldn't need every guy.
Yeah.
I said, no. In our draft pages, we have a place that says, he said.
Yes.
There need to be words in there. And so people are like, oh, do you really want, because there was a big gap between Brandon Wilson and Schreck because they moved up. And so it was like, are you really going to get him? I said, yes, I want Mason Schreck. And I honestly didn't know if this was going to be a three question interview under a minute. It was maybe the best one that we did all day because his story was interesting on almost being selected. I found the highlight video. He said he was happy to work with me. I mean, I wanted to give the guy a hug. He told me he said he cried right when he got picked.
Yeah.
I wanted to write 50 inches. I wanted to write 2,000 words on Mason Schreck. Good for him. I'm excited. I'm also excited to work with him.
Yeah.
So good for him. What made you mad?
You know what? Me and Mike Mayock, I get a digital fist bump to Mike Mayock over the NFL Network. When all this clown show, primates. No, we're a primate.
Orangutans.
I was going to say primates are making
picks. A dude made a pick from space.
Primates made picks of other primates. I can't really go there.
We're primate confused.
Right. Like Kramer says, I'm an innocent primate too. That was all ridiculous. And then we had NFL Network on because they were ahead of ESPN on the picks. And then it turned into like some whatever happened at the end with the sob stories of all these guys thanking everybody. And Mayock sitting there threatened to walk off the stage at one point. You know, when the Colts were up, he's like, we're going back to the zoo. I'm leaving. And then he said something else when the Raiders were picking. You know, he thought it was disrespectful that they weren't talking about the Raiders pick. And then is this like sob story again? I like those guys, at least what they do. I don't know any of them, but what I don't even care either. I don't care about the cameraman. I don't care about Charles Davis like being sad that he got fired or whatever was going on. And Mike Mayock's like, can we end this the right way and talk about these guys?
Yeah.
So yes, look, I don't. We've established this, Paul. I'm not a huge draft guy.
No.
Like I know what it is. Yes, I know what it is. Right. It's important. So I'm with Mayock. Let's do the job, not this other crap.
Dude, you didn't even mention the most egregious element of all of the chicanery. How about when they were just pulling fans out of the audience to make picks?
God, yeah.
My tweet, I believe, was, in case you're, because it was the last 10 or 15 picks, I said, in case you're still watching the draft, one, sorry, two, apparently they now just pick audience members out to come and make picks. One dude came up. He was suns out, guns out.
And he tucked
Dallas
his shirt
Cowboys.
In.
Yeah, sleeveless shirt tuck, screaming about how much he loves the Cowboys and yelling this poor guy's name. This poor guy had the dream of his life and some schnozzle
right.
who they pulled out of the audience with no sleeves is the one yelling it. You know what? Come on.
Yeah.
And if I hear Fly Eagles Fly one more time, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
It
was, you know, we mentioned Paul Daugherty earlier, you know, and he was sad that Anthony Munoz had to announce Joe Mixon. Anthony Munoz, class all the way, gold jacket. Maybe that's why he has a gold jacket and Drew Pearson is just running around yelling shit.
Yeah.
Now, Drew Pearson might say, hey, you got a gold jacket, I got a ring. But, look, I get it. NFL Network's trying to do some entertainment. I understand. I understand. However, all of that became a little
much.
Yeah. Tag McKinley, do your thing.
Oh.
Your life changed. Weapon X, Brian Dawkins, and Brian Westbrook, and Drew Pearson, whatever. Like, that whole thing was just ridiculous.
Yeah. It was
The whole thing just turned, I think, a little too far.
Too far. Suns out, guns out, tuck in your sleeveless shirt. Yeah,
that made me mad, Paul.
That was too far. That was when it officially went too far. I think that made a lot of people mad. All right. So, I think we covered it all. Next week, I'm going to give the teaser here, and I'm doing it in good faith to two people that said they wanted to do this, and I'm hopeful to be able to bring this to you. So if it doesn't happen, it's their fault. It means they backed out on me. But we're gonna, if they don't do next week, we're going to definitely try to do it very soon. During rookie minicamp, I want to bring in Mike Potts and Steven Radicevich, two of the primary Bengals scouts, guys that do not get near enough love for what they do.
Right.
I mean, this was a lot of work that they put in to get here, and they saw all these guys. They've been working on it for over a year. They deserve some vacation time. And they know a lot about all these. I want to have both those guys on here. Talk about being a scout. Talk about the process. And talk about these guys that ended up getting selected for the Bengals. Hoping to have that as our BBP next week. So look out for that. And then in the very near future after that, the showdown.
I'll take James.
The showdown with HTJ where it's going to get real. So looking forward to that coming up. Since all that's in the future. Keep checking back. Cincinnati.com, much more reaction. Rookie Minicamp next week. Plenty of stories up there. And it was fun bringing it to you. Thank you to everybody who thanked us.
Yeah.
We really appreciate that. We love doing it when for you guys. And it's a good time. So I hope you had a good time. We tried to have some fun with this one because it was you had no other choice.
Yes. Yeah. It's a long BBP because it was a long draft. Yeah. And we tried to have some fun. So hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we did.
All right. So. I mean, there's only one artist that this can be, right? I mean, the only one rapper was a centerpiece of Bengals draft weekend, correct?
That is true.
I mean, Snoop Dogg,
yes,
is tied to John Ross.
Yes.
He sent him a message. John Ross came up in Snoop's youth football league in the LBC, which I'm so mad. The one question I wanted to ask, I never found the right opportunity to ask John Ross, and that was, how much drama is there in the LBC? So much? Right? Like, I felt like that was the perfect question to ask, and I never found it. I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
But in honor of that, because there's so much drama in the LBC, and Snoop has stayed really good friends with John Ross throughout this whole thing, and I'll be GD'd if Snoop wasn't at Riverbend in Cincinnati on Thursday night.
Right.
It was just kind of a Snoop-Cincinnati connection all weekend. So, gin and juice, man.
Yeah.
There's so much drama in the LBC, and the LBC just came to Cincinnati. This is what we
were rolling on Sunday, man.
Yeah.
We needed to relax a little bit.
Yeah, that's so, yeah. You're right. You're right. It's fitting because there were a few of those thrown down. So, all right. Thanks to Snoop for showing up, and thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week on the BBP.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass hits like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party's still jumping because my mama ain't home. I got some freaks in the living room getting it on, and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you gonna do? I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn off the lights and close the doors. But what? We don't love them no.
Yeah.
So we gon' blow a ounce to this. G's up, freeze up for a second, now bounce to this. Laid back
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, smoking in clouds, sipping on beer and pills. Laid back
with my mind on my money and my money
now
on my mind.
Got me some Seagram gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now these types of things happen all the time. You gotta get yours before.